Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, we will remember Pete Seeger, too. We will take your eulogies on the phones and replay part of his 2012 interview on this program, including how Pete Seeger wanted to be remembered.
He made up songs that tried to persuade people to do something, not just say something.
You can start your tributes now on social media. Post them to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Or tweet at Brian Lehrer or on Facebook at Brian Lehrer WNYC. Anything you want to say about Pete Seeger, as he has now passed at the age of 94. Also today, why the U.S. and Russia are not cooperating fully on Olympic Games security is secrecy on both sides, putting the world's athletes and spectators at risk. And will Edward Snowden, with asylum in Russia, show up and emphasize the point? And parents, does this sound like you? You increasingly think football is barbaric. But yes, you'll watch the Super Bowl with your kids. We'll have a call-in for conflicted football fans, especially if you're parents. How do you hold those two thoughts in your brain at the same time? Football is barbaric, and I'll watch and enjoy the Super Bowl. But first, can the President of the United States order a minimum wage hike without the approval of Congress? Apparently, yes, for certain workers, employees of federal contractors, to be specific. And we will apparently hear that order in the State of the Union address tonight. Here is former Clinton chief of staff and current Obama advisor John Podesta on Morning Edition today. Will the president announce that order tonight?
He will do that. And, of course, he will call on the Congress to raise the minimum wage for everyone in the country. It hasn't been raised since 2009, and it's at levels that we haven't seen since Harry Truman was president. He'll also work with mayors and governors who are trying to raise the minimum wages in their states and cities.
John Podesta on Morning Edition today. With congressional obstruction a given on almost everything, what other executive actions might we hear about tonight? Let's ask Neera Tanden, president of the Center for American Progress, the think tank founded by John Podesta, who we heard in that clip, who is helping shape the executive action agenda on issues on which Congress won't act. Podesta's specific task for the president right now. Our guest, Neera Tanden, was a top policy advisor to the Hillary Clinton primary campaign in 2008 and then Barack Obama's general election campaign. Ms. Tanden, thank you so much for coming on today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Can we start with that specific order that John Podesta was talking about there? Do you know why the president even can order a minimum wage hike for some workers but not for others?
Well, he actually has a lot of power over federal workers and federal contractors. So that's what this is really covering. It's people who do business with the federal government. The federal government is simply saying in those contracts they're going to require that people are paid $10.10, a higher minimum wage. And, you know, that's really consistent with his support for a minimum wage broadly. And I think it really makes sense to do that. We actually know that increasing the minimum wage will increase demand and help economic growth overall. So doing it where he can makes a lot of sense.
And listeners, especially if you're Obama supporters, what other executive action would you like to see the president take? This is the new term that we're going to be hearing a lot over the next few days at least, and maybe for the rest of his term. It's not executive orders, because that refers to a very specific kind of legal move by a president. It's executive action, things that he and his whole executive branch of the government, like the EPA with respect to climate change through regulation, things like that, can do. Executive action. If Congress is obstructionist, what kind of executive action would you like to see President Obama take? What would you like to hear him talk about like that in the State of the Union address tonight? 212-433-WNYC. Or on the other side, if you cringe at this notion of the president doing things unilaterally, or you don't like Obama's policies in general and you cringe at the idea of him doing things unilaterally, what are you afraid he might do that you would like him to restrain himself from? 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. as we talk to Neera Tanden, president of the Center for American Progress think tank. Have you been talking to your former colleague, John Podesta, about what other executive actions rather than legislative proposals we might hear tonight?
Well, I actually think there are some limits as to what John can talk about specifically with the Center for American Progress. But we have been pretty active with the administration and have good relationships over there. So we've been hearing for the last couple of weeks about the kinds of things they want to do. Of course, the president will announce a variety of actions tonight. But I think, you know, what they're really looking at is what can he do to expand opportunity wherever he can. So obviously there have been ideas about retirement savings and gearing retirement savings more to workers who don't currently have those plans. I think what you saw last week where the president brought together college presidents, again, to ensure that low-income students have access to college and actually graduate. I think all of the ideas that they're really working on are ones that ensure that people have really real opportunity in this economy, not only people who are struggling, but people who are struggling to stay in the middle class, not just get into it.
So when we make a word cloud tonight, you think we're going to hear that word opportunity more than inequality?
I would imagine that we'll hear more about opportunity rather than inequality. But I think, you know, there's a lot of sort of talk in Washington about inequality versus opportunity. To me, we're really talking about the same thing. Obviously, in this economy over the last couple of years, we've seen a real problem with a growth at the ends. You know, there's a few more really wealthy people and a lot more poor people. But that also means that we've just seen a lot fewer middle class people. And I think expanding the middle class and opportunities to get into the middle class is what the president will talk about. And I think that's an important goal, not just for fairness, but also for economic growth.
And, of course, we're hearing the word inequality a lot here in New York City these days because
absolutely.
Mayor de Blasio made that the centerpiece of his campaign, and he still uses it centrally in talking about what he's going to try to accomplish in the early days of his administration. I want to play you a clip of David Brooks on NPR All Things Considered last Friday. He would say the problem with making the minimum wage the centerpiece of an inequality agenda is that it still leaves people making only $10. Well, I would say it still leaves people making only $10 an hour, which is still poverty wages pretty much. And I know you just listed a number of other things that pertain to college and other steps toward the middle class. But let me get your reaction to what David Brooks did say about inequality. Here is David Brooks last Friday on All Things Considered.
The reason the rich are getting richer is one set of problems. The reason the poor are not rising is an entirely different set of problems. I guess I'd like to talk him to talk about opportunity and mobility and what can we do to give people the tools to compete in an economy. And it's ground that's perfectly familiar to him, how to give people better parenting skills, nurse-family partnerships, how to give kids early childhood so they're school-ready, some of the early childhood programs he's talked about, some of the charter schools. A lot needs to be done for teenagers. Teenagers are dropping out of the career path, successful career path, at greater rates than any other age group. So I'd like to see him lay out a menu of human capital policies, not emphasizing the class inequality as much as just opportunity. And I do think he could get a bipartisan legislative victory out of that.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Maybe the president was listening to David Brooks on Friday and decided to emphasize the word opportunity rather than inequality, or maybe he was going to do it anyway. But this notion that there is an inaccuracy in focusing on inequality too much as the problem, or that there is legislative victory possible when focusing on opportunity. What do you think about either of those things?
You know, so I disagree with David Brooks in that, you know, I think it's fine to focus on opportunity or inequality. I think these are both important issues, and they are obviously very related. You know, where I disagree with David Brooks is that I think that there is a challenge of poverty in our economy, and we've had a problem with poverty for obviously throughout our history. We've had that challenge, and I think we should take steps to address it. And I would agree with him on a variety of the proposals he even talked about around human capital to address poverty issues. But something has changed in our economy over the last several years. Wages are down. productivity is up, which is just another way of saying people are working harder throughout this economy. Median wages are stagnating, and they've stagnated for the last 10 years. And that's happening at a time where people are working harder, basically for less money or about the same that they were making 10 years ago. And so I think that's a real pressure point in this economy. That's a discussion about inequality. Why are the extremes growing and the middle shrinking?
So let me play one more. Go ahead.
So I actually think a focus on opportunity that addresses what is happening to the middle class we've all expected and people trying to get into it is a good way to go. But if opportunity is just a way to is just a means by which we shy away from looking at the problems of basic fairness in the economy, then I think that's the wrong way to go.
So we'll continue this phantom conversation between you and David Brooks for one more clip, because he also said in that All Things Considered segment that talking about the kinds of things you were just mentioning, like wage stagnation and median income, is half of the equation. Listen.
Single parenthood strongly correlates to income inequality and low opportunity, especially for the children of single moms. And so why is that? A, economic, because there are not a lot of marriageable dads out there making decent money. And so you do have to have wage subsidies for that. You have to have infrastructure jobs to give men more jobs to make them more marriageable. But then there's also a cultural factor of prioritizing marriage, making it early in the life story where people decide to get married before they have kids. And so I agree it's both those things.
Both those things, says David Brooks. Do you also agree, and do you think we might hear anything on that side of the political ledger, social, you know, analysis ledger from the president in the State of the Union address?
You know, I actually don't have a strong sense we're going to hear a lot about marriage. And actually, you know, CAP just put out a major report, Women Pushing Back from the Brink, with Maria Shriver and the Shriver Foundation. And, you know, it's a really large-scale report looking at the challenges that low-income women are facing. You know, we have 100 million women in this economy who are either in poverty or cycling in and out of poverty or one paycheck away from poverty. So it's an awful lot of women.
And disproportionately, they're single moms. Is that something we ignore?
Absolutely. They're absolutely single moms. And really what's happening, and if you ask these women what's really happening, is there a grave set of economic choices that they're facing. I mean, they're facing struggles. They have to work, and there are very few supports for working. There's, you know, most women in this category, the vast majority, don't have access to sick days. So they have to choose between getting a paycheck and taking care of a sick child. We don't have paid leave in this country. We're one of a handful of countries that don't have it. So I would agree with David Brooks when he talks about an economic analysis about why these things are happening. And look, I'm a strong believer in having two parents involved in the life of children. I think it is a challenge for many children that they used to have two parents, that many kids in previous eras had two parents, and now there's one. I think marriage is a convenient issue, often for conservatives to talk about, because there's really not that much we can do about it, and it gives them an excuse from taking action on these things we know we can do.
Maybe instead
that will help parents be good parents.
Instead of beating up on single mothers, which is how it sometimes comes out of conservative mouths, the president should be beating up on non-custodial fathers. I don't know if you were at the 2008 convention in Denver, but
I was, actually.
I was there in the stadium listening to the president's convention address, and the loudest applause in the entire address was when he talked about – he gave one line about fathers taking responsibility for their children. And, you know, and I don't think that I've heard it a whole lot during the 5 years of the administration. And I've sometimes wondered why, because he could have come back to that as, you know, not to negate any of the economic proposals that he's interested in. But I was surprised after hearing that line, get that response at the nominating convention, meaning, you know, committed Democrats thought that was an important thing to talk about, that he hasn't really talked about it.
You know, I agree with you. I think that is an important issue. And I think we can talk about the importance of having two parents involved in the lives of their children. And And I, you know, he's very eloquent given his own history and his own upbringing when he talks about those issues. So I think that does make sense. I just think that we should also recognize that what's really happening to the American family is a product of a lot of forces out there, and that, you know, the truth is that these mothers are really heroes. I mean, they're working, you know, one, two, three jobs to take care of their families and their children and to give them a better life. And the really sad fact is that we're doing very little to help them.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're previewing the State of the Union address tonight with Neera Tanden, president of the Center for American Progress, the progressive think tank, and with President Obama expected to announce some executive actions, things that the executive branch can do on its own without the cooperation of Congress, which is not likely to pass many Obama proposals. We're going to take some of your phone calls on that now. People are calling in with executive actions you would like to see the president take, or if you're an opponent of his agenda, executive actions that you are cringing in the hopes that he doesn't take, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. All our lines are full at the moment. Nathan in Parsippany, you're on WNYC. Hello, Nathan.
Hello there. I'd like to see the president call Congress into special session and have them do some of the problems that we have within the United States, such as water usage, transportation, the condition of our bridges and tunnels, and have them work on that, because Congress is not really spending a lot of time within Washington to discuss this within committees.
Nathan, thank you very much. So, special session on jobs and infrastructure. How about Judy in Shrewsbury, New Jersey? Judy, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Terrific. I love your show.
Thank you.
I would like to see the president be more of a leader on climate change issues. I'd like to see him pass, if he could, a tax on carbon at the source so that fossil fuel extractors, the oil, gas, and coal people, would be taxed for taking this out of the earth and then polluting our environment. And it would level the playing field, and I'd like to see clean energy expanded, which would create jobs, which is an issue a lot of people are talking about.
Thank you, Judy. Carbon tax, a non-starter in Congress, though. So we'll come back and talk about more that he might do on climate change in the executive branch. John in Lower Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Yeah, I think he should throw a few bombs. I know this isn't his style, but for example, West Virginia just had the third major water problem due to lack of regulation in the last 5 years. When these things come up, the president should go to the pool, you know, get on television and hammer directly what is going on, lay it out. He doesn't seem to do that, and call out the bad actors. He doesn't do that. I don't understand what's wrong with him. I mean, I think the reason the Tea Party came to power is because there was a huge amount of anger in the American public about the financial scandal, and he didn't do anything about that. He didn't harness that energy by calling out the bad actors, laying it out real simply, and, you know, even if he doesn't get anything passed by Congress, which by now he should figure out he's not going to, use the bully pulpit. Lay it out to the American people very simply and hammer it home. He just doesn't do that. I don't understand why not.
John, thank you for your call. And you hear that frustration, Neera Tanden, and you know John is hardly alone among Obama supporters. In fact, though this has been going on throughout his administration, this kind of frustration, right now people are comparing President Obama to President Lyndon Johnson because of the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty Declaration and the Civil Rights Act on people's tongues, 50th anniversary right now. And so many Democrats ask, why can't Obama schmooze like Johnson? Why can't Obama threaten Congress like Johnson? Why can't he go to the American public and throw down the gauntlet like Johnson? Does he just not have as good political skills to go with his policy beliefs? And are you frustrated, too, as, you know, somebody in charge of an activist think tank?
You know, I was very privileged to work in the Clinton administration and in the late 90s. And I would say that, you know, people should recognize, actually, when you look at all of these issues, infrastructure, climate, regulation in general, I mean, the challenge, I think, is that the president is facing the most intransigent, obstacles and opposition than any president has faced in the history of the country. And You know, there were a lot of complaints in the Clinton administration, and we complained a lot about the Republicans in Congress then, and they were moderate bipartisan actors by the standards we're dealing with now. I mean, the level of filibuster use, the fact that these very basic issues, I mean, infrastructure is a great example. Not, you know, just before the president became took office, there were dozens upon dozens upon dozens of House Republicans who had sponsored infrastructure legislation and, you know, in legislation that would expand our investment in infrastructure because they knew that that would create jobs, that it was a huge need in the country. We have very low interest rates. If you're going to fix our airports or our roads, this is the proper time to do it. It's the best time ever. Creates jobs at a time we know we're going to need those jobs. And yet the president comes into office and that support falls away, even though the Chamber of Commerce, Business Roundtable all support these basic ideas. So I think that's why you're going to see the president tonight talk about what he can do when a Congress fails to act. Hey, and again, it's not the Congress, it really is the House of Representatives.
So let's take another call with what people think the president might do as a matter of executive action. And I told that one caller that we would come back to the question of climate and carbon, but I didn't realize that our next caller up is going to be a sometimes guest on this show, the environmentalist Robert F. Kennedy Jr. calling in. Bobby, is that really you?
Yes, it is, Brian.
How you doing? Thanks for calling up.
I'm good. I wanted to say something about the last question that that you asked, which was the comparison between Obama and Johnson. I was around during the Johnson administration. Johnson had one Strom Thurmond in the United States Senate. Obama has 45 Strom Thurmonds in the Senate and about 250 in the House. We've never seen a polarized legislative branch of the kind that we have now. And, you know, I think Obama, as many mistakes I think he's made, I think you have to understand that he's dealing with a different political landscape than Johnson ever had to deal with. The issue I was calling about is the two things that he can do to that will create jobs, that will help our, that will fortify our national security, that will restore our national prestige and leadership and create prosperity in this country and halve our national deficit, which is to help end dependence on foreign carbon and domestic coal. And the two things that he can do overnight is, one, to change federal purchasing policies, particularly among the military, to end the purchase of foreign oil. Right now, the oil purchases by the federal government are, in essence, and our deadly addiction to Mideastern oil is essentially funding both sides of the war against terror. It makes no sense. We should be purchasing local, clean, renewable power. The second thing that he ought to be doing is to force the carbon cronies and the utilities who use carbon to internalize the cost of production. Right now, we can deliver through wind and solar in almost 40 states cheaper electrons, even with the huge subsidies that are going to big carbon. We can deliver cheaper electrons to the consumers than the incumbents can, and the coal and oil incumbents can. The problem is the infrastructure and they get to externalize their costs. They get to put mercury in the environment that has poisoned now every freshwater fish in America. They impose get to spew ozone and particulates, which kill 60,000 Americans a year. It pose $345 billion in health care costs on our country. We could pay for Obamacare 10 times over by eliminating that pollutant. And they get to, of course, discharge carbon, which is simply putting their waste into the public commons. And EPA has the power to end all of those, to force those companies to internalize the cost of those discharges the same way that they internalize their profits. And that's instead of forcing the public to pay the cost of bringing their product to market. I believe in free market capitalism. This is not free markets. This is corporate crony capitalism that's allowing them to bring their product to market and forcing the public to subsidize their costs and their profits.
Wow. Neera Tanden, Robert Kennedy, do you know each other?
We actually do.
Yes.
From Hillary's campaign a long time ago in New York.
So, Neera, do you have any sense that any of those very specific executive actions on climate that could be taken will be taken?
Well, I think that the president is particularly focused on passing the Climate Action Plan, which is EPA's rules to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. There is widespread opposition to that. Progressives from around the country really need to shore up the administration as they look at that. I absolutely agree that the fact that we have essentially energy companies basically being free riders to oil companies to basically pollute and not internalize the cost of that pollution is a major economic challenge and one that we should address. But I think we should first work to pass the thing that we have right in front of us, which is these greenhouse gas, basically these standards around coal plants that are a very big fight to get done.
Bobby Kennedy, are you in touch with the White House at this point? Have any predictions to make about some of the things on your own list and whether they will be ordered?
Well, I'm assuming EPA is in a little bit of a turmoil right now because the former administrator of EPA, who was very much in favor of imposing carbon limitations on coal-burning power plants, has left the administration. So we're not sure what kind of how aggressive EPA is going to be about pushing these new standards. The other big, thing that Obama ought to be doing is to kill the XL pipeline, which is going to raise the cost of energy to the people of our country and create a huge carbon liability to all of humanity. And it's an insane project, and it makes no economic sense. His own State Department has found that pipeline will create 35 jobs, permanent jobs in this country. That's all, with all of the liabilities that are coming with it.
Bobby, can I ask you one other thing? As a Hudson River-based environmentalist, did you know Pete Seeger?
Yes, of course I did.
You want to say anything about his life?
Pete Seeger was an American hero. He was an American icon. He was a guy who stood up to Joe McCarthy. He fought for his entire life, was devoted to forcing our country to live up to its highest ideals. And he did that with such humility and with such joy and with such kindness that he inspired so many people to follow him. He was literally kind of a St. Francis of Assisi figure, or even a kind of a Christ-like figure. He walked the banks of the Hudson. He lived very, very humbly. People, literally, John Cronin, who was the Hudson River keeper, was a roofer and a commercial fisherman. He was repairing a roof, and Pete Seeger called him off the roof and said, "Come down to the Hudson and help me stack pumpkins on the Clearwater." And that's how John Cronin began his life of advocacy on the river. And he literally called people from their professions and their jobs and said, "You got to devote your life to something that is higher, something that is meaningful to our whole community." And he did that with hundreds of thousands of people. Clearwater educates about 20,000 school children in New York City every year, makes them fall in love with the Hudson. New York City is a maritime city. There's only one of the five boroughs of New York that is connected to the mainland of the continental United States. The rest of them are islands in the middle of the Hudson, and he reminded New Yorkers of this great treasure.
What a beautiful eulogy. Thank you so much for the honor of that and for calling into the show today, Robert F. Kennedy, Jr.
Thanks, Brian.
And Neera Tanden, president of the Center for American Progress. We're over time, but just give us one final thought, maybe a prediction on what the main topic of discussion will be tomorrow after the State of the Union address.
I think that hopefully the country will be talking about not just the specific proposals, but the kind of challenges we're facing and the real pressures we need to put on Congress to actually do something about median wages, the fact that so many people are struggling. That's my greatest frustration, that the country really understands the economy is less fair than it used to be, and Washington is still far behind.
Now, listeners, if you want to help us remember Pete Seeger, later in the program, in about an hour, we will take your eulogies on the air, on the phones. We will replay part of his 2012 interview on this program, including how he wanted to be remembered. But you can start your tributes right now on social media. Post them to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or tweet at Brian Lehrer or on Facebook at Brian Lehrer WNYC your remembrances or appreciations of Pete Seeger. And also, folks, you're invited to join me for a live chat during the State of the Union address tonight on our website at WNYC.org. Chat begins at 8:45 before the 9 o'clock speech at WNYC.org. We will stream the speech live there as well and air it live on the radio, too. 8:45 for the start of our simultaneous State of the Union online chat at WNYC.org. And Neera Tanden, President of the Center for American Progress, thank you for giving us all this time today.
Thank you so much for having me.